Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. This is Michael Dean, and today our guest is Cody Wilson. How you doing, Cody?
I'm doing all right, Michael. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Let's have you tell what you're up to with this printable gun thing.
Sure. I mean, we can just start at the beginning if you want, man.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Somewhere back in February, I've got two or three friends who basically, I can't say they're in the liberty movement, but, you know, we're just always thinking of ways to live out our principles instead of just, you know, prescribe policy or be like, oh, you know, things should be this way. So, what can we do? What can we do to kind of shake things up? And, printable guns just came up in conversation. One of us is more or less familiar with 3D printing as a technology, and everything just kind of progressed from there. So we wanted to, we explored things for a while. We wanted to see what kind of, what was feasible, what wasn't, what are the physics, what are the economics? I mean, would it be possible to build something around a round? Would we have to build our own proprietary round? These kinds of questions. And somewhere around, March or April, we decided, hey, we can really do this. So we started putting the resources together to kind of launch a little project.
Let's take a step back. There probably are listeners who don't know what 3D printing is. Can you briefly explain 3D printing?
Yeah, in a very easy way. Sure, it's almost like there's two dimensional printing that just prints on one layer, like a sheet of paper with depositions of ink, like the old inkjet printers. We're not talking about laser printers here. This is the same thing. If you take a deposition head and you heat up plastic, that plastic can be melted and printed in drops, much like these inkjet printers, and you just build up the layers one by one, kind of in three dimensions instead of two. Does that make sense, or was it more complicated?
No, let me ask some follow-ups. So you can, with a 3D printer, you can print objects instead of just documents.
Yes, of course. Yes, you can print real things. And I don't want to oversimplify the technology. There are many different kinds of three-dimensional printing. The one that we thought had the best chance of some real application. What I mean is getting in the hands of the most people the quickest was this kind of fused deposition modeling, ABS hobby type printer stuff, thermoplastics. But there's all other kinds of three-dimensional printing going on right now.
And you want to design a gun that could be shared as a digital file freely over the internet, a functioning gun that people could print anywhere and use, right?
That's it. That's our mission. It's not important to us to have something so reliable that it's your go-to weapon or something you hide under the bed. In fact, I mean, it almost needs to be shamelessly ineffective. But if it has the promise of lethality, at 25 yards and won't blow up in your hand, if you can share that file, we think that's just spectacular. You know what I mean? If you could print something out like that, that's just the beginning of something huge.
So when you say it needs to be shamelessly ineffective, do you mean it just needs to be a basic functioning thing that can fire a projectile and work as a proof of concept, right?
I do mean it that way, yes. I think, in fact, the more we try to add features or improve quality, well, we're going to be frustrated. I think if it's reduced to its bare component, just one or two actions, maybe it might need a spring, maybe not. But, the more rudimentary it is at this stage, I think the more fantastic.
Even if it were single use, it would meet your criteria of proof of concept, right?
Oh, yes, very much. Single use is, in fact, the only thing that we're concerned about at this point. I mean, if it fires once, good. We suspect that it will be able to fire more than once, but once is where we are right now. That's all we're shooting for.
Now, I know that there's a burgeoning community of people doing 3D printer stuff and sharing files. These are used by giant corporations in experimental phase and actually into, are they used in corporations in manufacturing yet, or is it still just for research and experimentation?
My experience and research suggests that everything is, at least in plastics, is done with rapid prototyping. So kind of, you know, smaller scale iterations of more expensive pieces or complicated pieces. But yeah, I think, especially in metal, there's 3D metal printing. Corporations are using it for everything.
For modeling?
In empty cars and an airplane, sometimes the only way you can make a specialized part is to print that part now. They don't even use CNC machines. They print it.
What are the costs of the printer that you're modeling this for?
We went ahead and shot for a Mojo printer by Stratasys. I think our instincts were confirmed when the user Havblue from the AR forum said that he used an old Stratasys printer to print his AR lower. But we're looking at the Mojo printer. It's $9,000, another $900 for the full software package and everything. But that can be leased for, I think, as little as like $180 a month. And then that's what we're hoping to work with.
And then how much are materials?
Materials, we've estimated that if a build in the build envelope, and if the gun is, let's say, somewhere around 5 inches long, we're looking at $5 per cubic inch. And we just estimated that we're going to have to blow through a lot of, you know, somewhere around $5,000 to $10,000 in materials and consultation costs. And so we rounded to $20,000. We just feel confident we can do it at that.
And that's not per gun. That's for the whole project, for all the ones that you won't work that you'll make, you know, while you're working on it. Yeah.
The whole project. And in fact, we're confident we'll have enough ABS Plus, if the proof of concept goes off, that we can print these little miniature replicas that people are selecting at our Indiegogo page as a kind of perk for contributing to the cause. So we can, you know, it's a way of giving someone a token. They don't just contribute. They also get something back, you know, even if it's just kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing.
Yeah. I know that there is a burgeoning kind of hacker hobbyist community with 3D printers. I know that Make Magazine, who I've written for before, is very involved with it, and Maker Faire, which is by Make Magazine, and a lot of the people from O'Reilly Media, who I've also written for. I was telling you before this that I used to do a lot of work for O'Reilly, and I've done work for Make Magazine and been involved with Maker Faire and been a presenter there. And I was doing a lot of stuff for them, and then all of a sudden I started blogging a whole bunch about guns, and all of a sudden I was not getting work from them anymore. And I'm not saying it's cause and effect. It could have been the economy. It could have been anything. But a lot of that kind of tech nerd people, you know, I'm not collectively speaking of all of them, but I've encountered a lot of stuff in person of tech nerd people at that level who are very anti-weapon. And you said that the guy who made the AR-15 lower printable file and tried to put it somewhere, it was taken down. Where was that?
Yeah, I don't know if it was him or someone else that tried to share at the Makerspace, wherever they share the MakerBot, like, community files, you know, where you can just, like, look up a library of things to print. But right, it was taken down from whoever shared it had it. It was taken down. That's all I know. That's all I read. It seems that's the impression I'm getting as well. When I go to, like, the 4chan boards and technology, and when I hit up people who I think might be more willing to give their input because they're more knowledgeable of the process, these are the people that seem to give the most resistance.
You know, it's kind of disappointing to me how statist so many scientists are. And it's kind of contradictory too, because a lot of the maker stuff is about things that are weapons. You know, I mean, I've seen articles on, you know, how to make a 50,000 watt laser in your basement, you know, and that could blind somebody at a mile. They do a lot of stuff with robotics that the people who do it really well get hired by the Department of Defense, you know, so they're making cute little robots that battle each other, but then they end up being weaponized. And there's this whole kind of thing with scientists that I think goes back to, like, the 50s or 60s of scientists kind of looking at themselves as the noble leaders who will lead us into a perfect world. And they always seem to want to have the government guns behind them to do it. And there's this whole kind of, like, UN connection and one world government connection with a lot of scientists. You know, they think, oh, this is horrible. The Democrats and Republicans are fighting, you know, and I just look at that as, like, two tyrants trying to pretend the other guy that they're not a tyrant and the other guy is. And a lot of scientists seem to have this view of, like, But if the scientists were put in charge, everything would be great, and we'd have the army tell the politicians what to do because we're smarter.
You know, I get that impression a lot as well, watching people who handle the public impressions of science. I mean, I'm not calling out Richard Dawkins for any of his philosophy or anything, but you get the impression that these people who are essentially status enablers feel like they're so much more ennobled and elite that, of course, they could run a utopian society if they were just given the reins. You know, if we would just give up our liberty, everything would be hunky-dory.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I think one of my favorite movies is Terminator 2, and I really think that a lot of people who think they're doing the noble work of science end up being like, what was the guy's name, the scientist that they had to go stop who built the Doomsday device? You know,
oh, the guy that built Skynet, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you end up doing if you're the noble scientist who's working, you know, calmly in the government research department on pure science. You end up designing friggin' net, which really, I mean, that came out around, you know, it was after the Reagan suggestion of the strategic SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, which was the Star Wars thing, which, right, you know, was supposed to be satellites that would laser missiles out of the sky. It wasn't feasible, but I think really that the proliferation of drones has become what Reagan had in mind.
You know what? Drones are the thing that it just occupies my thinking all the time. And in fact, I didn't tell you this, but one of the other projects we're working on is a site called dronehunter.org. And we're not going to help criminals or anything like that, but we really want to create a public space where people can, open source, of course, where people can contribute all the documents known out there, all the collected documents about, you know, drone reconnaissance, where drones are, who has drones, what are the ways to GPS spoof these things, what are the ways to defeat these things. You know, because I think conflict with drones is going to be a more regular, unfortunately, occurrence.
Yeah, you may end up in a FEMA camp for that website, but we'll see if free speech is really dead or not. You know, I mean, I kind of do this stuff without worrying about what's going to happen. And I'm doing, everything I do is legal. You know, all my guns are legal. I don't do drugs. I spend 40 hours a week working on producing shows and media that basically just slither, just skewer the government nonstop, right, but it's legal. I'm wondering how long it's going to be legal. You know, what do you think about where the world's headed?
Good question, man. I think, you know, there's a panoptic kind of police state momentum, right? I mean, everyone talks about like the post 9/11 moment and everything. I think, yeah, seditious activities, you know, there'll be new committees on un-American and subversive, you know, speech and behavior. I mean, I guess everyone has this anxiety. They're seeing a kind of funnel, if you will, civil liberties. And of course, you don't feel it unless you try to test some of your freedoms. And I think that's part of what we're doing as well. We're testing where this country has gone right now with some of these projects.
How would you describe your personal politics? I know you said you don't like labels, but try.
yeah, it's such a cliche, right? Yeah, I understand. But I guess, see, I've been in law school, so I've been progressively kind of berated by all these consensual, you know, liberals. But before I was in law school, I would have said, okay, Hans Hermann Hoppe, you're familiar with him. He's associated with Mises and this Rothbardian Austro-libertarianism, you know, but he calls himself an anarchist. His vision of a private law society is something that I share right now. I can't really call that a philosophy necessarily, but I think if I can try to do things that either compete with or replace or ignore state activities, then I'm living out an ethic that I think is not just authentic, but proves that capitalism, I don't know, is just, you know?
Well, it sounds like you'd fit somewhere around the realm of anarcho-capitalist, maybe.
I'd agree.
I mean, that's, for lack of a better term, that's what I say I am. You know, there's all these terms that most of my friends are that are either anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, agorist, libertarian.
Right.
You know, and I have problems with all those words because they sound like something that they aren't. You know, libertarian sounds like a Libertarian Party member to most people. Agorist sounds like a farmer. Voluntarist sounds like you're building Habitat for Humanity. And anarcho-capitalist sounds like a mixture of the two worst things most people can think of.
Yeah, exactly. There's such a pejorative kind of, you know, subtext there. So,
Yeah, I just say I'm a leave me alone guy. You know, I love the idea of voluntary law. Unfortunately, it mostly only exists in Heinlein novels, and I don't see it getting better before it gets a lot worse. There's actually something really cool that happened recently. Was New Hampshire is, to my knowledge, the first state who's passed a law, this was passed like last month, that makes it legal for the defense to instruct a jury about jury nullification. Did you know that?
Yes, I saw these headlines on Twitter. Clicked on a little bit. You know, I got a great news filter. So yes, that's very encouraging news, right?
And that might play very heavily into a trial coming up. Do you know about Adamo Freeman?
Yeah, I do. I've been following that.
Yeah, he's going. His trial starts Monday, and he's representing himself, which I wouldn't do, but it may work out. You know, because of that the nullification thing.
I'm so worried about him. I'm glad that he didn't take a plea and everything, and he's fighting it out. But man, this is like, I mean, let's be honest, right? The shark has to keep swimming, so they're gonna. I just feel like they're gonna chew him up regardless. I hope whatever the outcome, that this becomes some kind of rallying point for people, because I, you know, as much as I'm seeing kind of ascendant libertarian sentiments among people, I don't see any will for action. I see nothing but a kind of ennui and a resignation coming into November with this election and everything. It just doesn't seem like there's ever going to be a flashpoint, you know, where people are like, oh my God, you know, I'm just frustrated, right? And this, I hate to see a guy like Ademo just kind of get ground under the system and just ignored within the next couple of weeks, you know?
And that's how a lot of these things go too. Like, on our Freedom Fiends podcast, which has been going for a little over like a year and a couple months now, you know, twice a week, we're trying to get away lately from just talking about the tyranny today. You know, that's what all the libertarian podcasts spend all their time doing. We're trying to talk more in, you know, basically we want this stuff listened to in 100 years is part of it. And also we just get really worn down hearing about the daily tyranny todays that happen everywhere. But one thing that we've been doing is doing a segment, we haven't done it much, but we're going to be doing it more, is called Tyranny Last Year, where we take something that happened last year that everyone was buzzing about and follow up on it. Like one, for instance, is a year ago, there was a guy who was making silver medallions, and he made what I think was a mistake, was he put the word dollar on them. And
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And, you know, that guy's in prison, and they took, you know, like $1 million worth of gold and silver from him and stole it, and, you know, called him a terrorist because he was printing, it wasn't even money, it was just printing stuff that people could buy and sell and trade, but he put the word dollar on it, so it broke maybe a law, maybe didn't, but he's in prison, you know. And like everyone I knew was talking about that nonstop for like a week, like a year ago,
right?
And then I haven't heard
right.
a peep about it, so we revisited that recently, and that's something we're going to be doing. You know, I'm going to have you on here again in a year too, and hopefully it won't be a tyranny today. But let's talk more about let's talk more about the gun. So what is your purpose with trying to make a downloadable, printable gun that anybody in the world can print and have?
My purpose. Do you mean my personal motivation, or do you mean what I hope to achieve as an objective?
Both.
You mean both? Of course, right? That's always the answer. I think number one is, I hate to speak for my generation or my peers or anything, but
how old are you?
I think there's an understanding among at least this younger kind of WikiLeaks set, maybe like, let's say, Generation Y and X.
You're 24. You're 24, right?
Yeah, I'm 24.
Okay.
I just got out of college, you know. I think we just have a different attitude when it comes to like the distribution and sharing of information. You know, we think music should be free. And look, there are moral arguments here that about intellectual property that I'm just riding roughshod over. Okay, I understand. But it's our attitude about what the internet is and what information is and what its conditions are that I don't, it's just totally not shared by these older generations.
Well, yeah.
I think
and
it should apply to everything.
And yeah, I'm an anti-IP guy, but even to someone who believes in IP, it's really rare to find someone who's insane enough to think that something you come up with, you shouldn't be able to share. So, you know, there's really not an IP issue in you sharing what you come up with.
I agree with that, and I think we still work within the conduit of an intellectual property argument when we say, okay, well, we'll come up with this. But look, we're not going to place any claim over it. We want to just give it out. And at that point, you know, we, in a sense, I guess, relinquish ownership if there ever was any, you know?
Well, don't some people, I mean, I know you barely started doing this, and you've gotten criticism both from gun people and from people who are sharing files nonstop, and from people who I don't know about. Have you gotten any criticism yet from 3D printer enthusiasts, or they don't know about it yet?
Not self-identified.
Okay, but you've gotten criticism from liberals, I guess, for lack of a better word, or you know, people who are not gun, who are anti-gun, who basically think you're giving guns to the children of the world, and you've gotten criticism from gun people of this is too free and too freewheeling, and this is gonna set the Second Amendment back, you know. And those are, I got both those same criticisms from hundreds, if not thousands, of people when I made my movie Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So I know what you're in for. Both of those arguments are retarded. How do you feel about those two arguments? I mean, other than I'm sure you think they're retarded, but can you address them a little more specifically, each one of them?
Yeah, of course. I was actually expecting a little bit more of it than I've got so far. And right, it's early yet. You know, we've got
in a few hours this interview will be out, and things may change.
I hope so. Right. I mean, I was actually counting on nothing but opposition when we started, because that's just my instinct, right? I mean, I surround myself with people who aren't exactly on the same page in terms of political philosophy, of course. Or, you know, how could I not, right? But yeah, you know, when I approach the people like on the tech boards, and even some of the Redditors, we're on some subreddits right now. It was most disheartening to see people who are, you know, legitimate gun enthusiasts say, "Oh, well, great, you know, way to go, guy, setting us back." You know, like now they're really going to come down. They're going to regulate everything. You know, they're going to take our bullets away because now they can't regulate guns. And I get that that's a way of expressing frustration and perhaps some apprehension. I don't know. And I guess some people were also criticizing us personally for being so kind of rash about it and announcing, you know, not just, well, we want to do this, but saying we want to do this as an opposition to status, you know, central plans and, you know, castles in the sky and everything. People just, I think they're uncomfortable with it being represented or spearheaded in such a kind of public way.
Yeah. We're going to have a little station ID here, and then we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
So we're talking with Cody Wilson here on the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. And tell me a little bit more, Cody, about your motivations for wanting to give guns to everybody, or the ability to make them. And I want to tell you, the name of this episode that I have in mind is Free Guns for Everyone, Printable Guns with Cody Wilson. You cool with that?
Sounds great. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what are your motivations? What do you hope to accomplish or prove or demonstrate?
Right. Okay. Getting back to kind of our generation's attitude about information, I think I want to prove out something in an extreme case, right? So if what we believe is true about things like music or you know, books or other things, it should also be true about, you know, anything in a set of objects or a set of you know, anything that can be owned. And I've seen people kind of tease that out in their own logic and saying, well, I guess it applies to guns too. And so that pushes the frontier, I think, of this attitude I'm talking about among people about how just everything should be shared and free and open source. And then also our ultimate objective is to make some kind of statement, maybe not necessarily to governments or to sovereigns, but to people themselves, that, like, look, you know, everything that is the key to your individual sovereignty, your liberty, is in your hands. I mean, we want to underline your integrity as an individual. And I hope that, you know, it's been we've seen a lot of traffic. We've got quite a few donations, I think, in the past few days. But really, we've only been exposed to maybe 2,000, 3,000 people. I would love for this message to reach, you know, some significant percentage of the world, right? Even if the technology is still a little bit early.
I can't wait until you have this file and put it on BitTorrent, and which is largely Scandinavians and Europeans who, you know, love to share every piece of media they can and will hack anything they can. But a lot of them think, oh man, only the government and the military and the police should have guns.
I can't wait till there's a floating server somewhere over the ocean, right?
Well, drones.
Server with MagLink. We just know that one of those files is one of the wiki weapons. You know, it's just great. It will always be out there. And I don't want to say like, oh, I can retire, but I mean, I just feel like that would be such an accomplishment. And I feel like we're so close already to being there. I mean, with just the money we've gotten so far, just under $1,000, I'm almost comfortable leasing a printer right now and just going for it, man. Just doing it.
Well, you should, and you should also, I mean, I told you in the pre-interview that it's been my experience, you know, I've been making independent movies on DV film since 1998, you know, it's way before YouTube, was way before, I did not own a DV camera when I made my first movie. I walked over to the local art school, I walked up to kids who looked hip, said, who has a digital camera here? Do you want to make a movie with me? And, I directed and they filmed and it worked. And, the stuff is out there, you know, you don't have to even buy it. I think you still need donations to get this thing out there. There's a lot of expenses. I mean, you don't even have a good computer right now. are you staying with friends or living in your car or what's your deal?
Right now?
Yeah.
I didn't hear the first part of your question, but
where are you living? Are you staying with friends? Are you have an apartment or are you in your car or what are you doing?
Yeah. I'm not in my car, man. No, I'm living outside of the Little Rock metropolitan area. Just kind of on my own. Sometimes I'm staying with a friend of mine, but I mean, I'm okay. I'm in good spirits. You know, I've got material needs satisfied and everything. So it's not a big deal on my end. I don't want to make it about me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, how can people donate and help? I'm gonna embed all this and link it all. I'll embed your video and I'll link your links. But if you want to, if people are hearing on the radio, how do they find you?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. Second of all, we have a URL that directs to our main website. It's called printablegun.com. It's just kind of catchy, right?
Yeah.
That URL takes you to defensedistributed.com, which is just Defense Distributed is the name of our little collective.
Sounds like a subsidiary of General Electric. I love it. Defense Distributed. It's good.
It captures the ideas, right? Yeah. Like all of the ideas are kind of encapsulated in those two words. So they can go to that site. I would encourage them to watch the video, you know, and people need to think about the idea before they contribute to it. So the donation is really on a second location at Indiegogo.com. Now there's plenty of buttons on our main site to take you there, but really I would hope that you look around and agree with us in a sense or what we're trying to do before, you know, you give your hard-earned money. Because there's plenty of people that I think when they're exposed to this idea, they'll be more than happy to contribute. We just want people who are dedicated to, I guess, undermining the visions of these gun control regimes and future tyrannical societies, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it combines things in an interesting way of, you know, getting around possible gun control or future gun control, and also combining it with sharing stuff freely on the internet, which all the kids are doing it. They all love it. So it's cool. I mean, I actually came up with the idea of a printable gun. I would be hard-pressed to find the Freedom Fiends episode where we mentioned it, but we mentioned the idea at one point. You know, It's an idea that's out there, but I haven't seen anyone trying to do it. And I love that you're trying to do it, and it's awesome.
Man, thank you so much.
Yep.
You know, when we started our research, we were like, well, surely this is done, and this is probably available in a very public way. And this was before HavBlue came out.
Before what?
In fact, HavBlue's announcements really like predated our little video rollout by like a week. We were worried at first, like all of our thunder was going to be stolen, and that, you know, the revolution was already here, you know. And in a sense, it is, and that's fine. But before that, we were looking, and people had predicted printable guns as far back as we could see from, like, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And
Who had an announcement? Havaloo? I didn't hear that.
Oh, sorry. The guy's name is HavBlue, HaveBlue. That's his AR forum username, and that's kind of the handle everyone's been giving him. I forget his name at the moment. That's a shame. I really wish I could tell you his name. He's a guy that just, you know, one day on the AR forums was like, you know, hey, by the way, I printed out this blower, I put 200 rounds through it, you know, and it's, I don't know, it worked. Everyone was just kind of blown away.
That's cool. Interesting that he took his name is HavBlue. That's the Lockheed code name for a proof of concept that preceded the Nighthawk stealth aircraft.
Oh, wow. Good. I did not know that.
Good.
There's kind of extra significance there for me.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. So, do you carry a gun on a day-to-day basis?
I don't, no. I don't have a concealed carry or anything like that. I don't even have a handgun, no.
You own a... So, I asked you before if you're a gun guy, and what did you say?
Yeah, I kind of gave you a maybe, but I mean, I think we both decided I wasn't really a gun guy.
Well, I think you're a novice gun guy, and when my business and art partner, Nima Vedati, gets back from his like 9th vacation this year in Hawaii, he takes more vacations than Obama, man. He lives in Austin. I'm going to hook you up with him, and he'll probably take you. I will offer that he will take you out shooting, and you will be a gun guy after hanging out with him for a day.
And yeah, I'd love that.
He's cool.
I respect the culture. You know, I really do. I never really allow myself to get into it. Recently, I've kind of purchased some rifles and things, but I don't allow myself the free time to go really get good with them and everything. Man, I'd like to. I'd really like to.
Well, I kind of like that you're not a gun guy with this. For one thing, it's going to... you're not going to be tainted with a lot of what comes with being a gun guy. And, you know, there's a whole new generation of people like us. Well, I guess I'm like old enough to be your dad, but I consider myself, you know, 28 at heart. I'm 48. So there's a whole, you know, basically like gun guys, you know, NRA type gun guys, they're really square. I actually was a member of the NRA for a while and like wrote them and said, I don't want to be a member anymore because you guys backed Harry Reid. And the reason they, you know, Harry Reid is like one of the most socialist, hateful, gun-hating mofos out there. And when he was running for re-election, he stole a bunch of tax money and built a public rifle range in Nevada and won votes with it. And the NRA backed him for that. And I'm like, are you insane? You know, and at this point, I'm just like, politicians, they're just robots who fight with each other and I don't even pay attention to them. But I still stand by leaving the NRA. I mean, a lot of people like that are really, really square. The NRA is really into the war on drugs. They're really into like we need to arm our policemen more and arm our military more. You know, they're basically backing the what will probably lead to the ability for the state to have total war on its citizenry. And I'm criticizing the United States, but when I say the state, I mean every government in the world, from like you know, the Homeowners Association to the UN, and every country and state in between. I'm not picking on America. I just live here. So I talk a lot about it. I like that you're not a gun guy because it will remove some of the criticism possible of you of like, you're just doing this because you're a gun guy. It reminds me of the District of Columbia versus Heller decision. A lot of people don't know how that happened. It was the Cato Institute, which are like beltway libertarian types, you know, tie-wearing libertarian people, which, you know, God bless them, but they don't like me because I cuss a lot and talk about doing it with tranny hookers and shooting speed in alleys back in the day. You know, they're all for my right to do that, but they don't want to hear about it and that kind of people. So Dick, there was a guy there named Robert Levy, who was a, you know, libertarian billionaire who retired and became the head of the Cato Institute. He had never owned a gun in his life, and he made the Heller thing happen. He basically said, I want to do a Second Amendment test case, and he got a team of lawyers together, and they went through thousands of people who'd been denied, or hundreds of people who'd been denied a gun permit in D.C., and you know, culled it down to about 8 possible people, interviewed them all, and then picked the one guy that was like spotless, beyond reproach, you know, ex-cop, ex-military, straight as an arrow, had never posted anything on an internet board about like, goddamn the government, you know, like just was a regular Joe, square, upstanding dude. And they paid a couple millions of dollars to get this to the Supreme Court with that guy's cooperation. And it was a smart thing to do. And you're not really a gun guy yet, but you're doing this thing as a proof of concept, not just for the physics of it and the distributable file aspect of it, but to prove something about rights, I think. I mean, from what you've told me, it's like rights are universal. This isn't about guns.
Totally agree. I totally agree. And that's what's attractive about it for me, just the ideas. I hate to say it, but I mean, seductive. It's just an incredible idea, I feel like, from just an abstract standpoint. I mean, we either believe it or we don't, you know, so let's test it out and let's see what people agree with.
When are you, are you done with law school?
Oh, no, man, I just started.
Ah, okay.
Just started.
Do you have lawyers looking at this with you, helping you out?
Yeah, we do, actually. We've
good.
Had a lot of people volunteer their legal expertise, but we approach a pretty prominent group of lawyers, and they're interested, and we've been in contact, and we're having a pretty important discussion later in the month about things, you know, awesome. Just in case the state comes knocking. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe that a computer file could be illegal. You know, a computer file is just a really long number. But you know, like kiddie porn is just a really long number too. And, leaked state secrets are just a really long number too. So, you know, there's a possibility that someone could look at this as illegal at some point. I mean, you know, and it's all kind of cross jurisdictions in different countries because it's the world. But then again, it's also like, you know, maybe you could find a country. This is, I'm not giving legal advice. I'm just throwing out ideas here. You know,
right,
maybe,
yeah,
maybe you could find, you know, the country where this would be absolutely legal and, you know, tailor it to that. And if anyone else finds it, that's their problem. I don't know. I don't know. There's a million ways you could do it, but,
I hear you. I think there's a really good chance that this is at the nexus of the First Amendment and some other things. This might be the best legal regime on earth to try this, you know? That probably makes intuitive sense, right? I know it's the United States, but at the same time, I think, this is probably one of the best proving grounds, for the idea. And I'm happy to go ahead and, you know, take some fire for that. I hate to use a bunch of like gun metaphors over and over again, but you know,
there's a lot of them. I mean, there's some people don't even realize, you know, going off half cocked, you know, keeping your eyes, your sights on the prize. You know, there's a million of them out there, but so, an interesting thought is, if this is going to be composite, would it get through a metal detector?
That is an interesting thought.
Have you thought about that?
Cotter pins or springs or things like that, those would have to be taken out.
Or bullets.
Otherwise, that would be able to pass right through, I think.
Or
now,
bullets.
There are new metal detector technologies, you know, these backscatter x-rays and stuff. I don't really understand kind of, you know, the TSA era, so I don't know if it could get through, but I would guess it might.
Well, the TSA, I mean, the easiest way to understand it is... they have some of the most advanced technology in the world, and it's being handled by people who can barely tie their shoes.
Yeah, by trained children. I mean, you're right.
Advertise. I know a guy in TSA. There's a guy that used to be a fan of my band Bomb, my band in San Francisco that was signed to Warner Brothers and toured the world and stuff. This guy got in touch with me recently. I hadn't talked to him in 20 years. He was a fan of the band. And I was like, what are you doing, man? And he's like, hey, I'm working for the TSA. And I'm like, I've hung out with this guy, and he... I don't think he'd be able to hold a job doing manual labor, you know, in the real world.
Right.
Like, but he's working for the TSA.
From my experience, it just seems like all you have to do is look somewhat, I don't know, lazy and imposing at the same time. It's
yeah.
a strange mix of characteristics, you know.
Yeah. Well, they hire.
Stand there menacingly and lazy enough.
The TSA literally advertises on pizza boxes for employees now. and, you know, there was a thing in Detroit this week. Where there were some TSA people and some private guard people, or some DHS guards and some private guards who were guarding, working in an office building. And they discovered that there was a package that had been sitting there for 2 weeks, unclaimed. They'd x-rayed it 3 times. They had shaken it. They'd poked at it with a pencil and didn't know what it was and then left it there. And it turned out it was a friggin' bomb. And, you know, I think I'm not. And they probably, I'm guessing they probably, these guys were probably busy on their chromed robot turds updating their Facebook page and didn't notice it, you know, didn't pay attention to it.
I've been hearing nothing but reports about how like SEC people and, DOJ people are just being told like, stop looking at porn all day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
everyone's just totally preoccupied.
You know, one thing that may prevent or slow the police state is that the inefficiency of government and the idiots they hire. I mean, they hire some geniuses too, but they also hire some idiots.
I see nothing but a future of just extreme decadence, right? I mean, this is the most Byzantine kind of, you know,
yeah.
Bureaucracies upon bureaucracies.
And when you,
what does Obama do every State of the Union? He's like, but you know what? We have a problem. I announce a new bureaucracy.
Yeah. And when you say decadence, you're not saying it the same way Rick Santorum would say. You know, you're not complaining about the gays or the drug users. Yeah. You're talking about the movie Idiocracy, I think, being a documentary.
Even though I never saw that, I think we're on the same page. So, yes.
Yeah. It's basically, you know, the army does an experiment where they put a guy in cryostasis. They forget about him. 500 years later, he accidentally thaws out and wakes up. And he was chosen for this project because he's the most average guy in the army. He's like average height, average weight, average IQ, average age. And when he wakes up in 500 years, he's literally the smartest guy on Earth, and everyone is really dumb, and everything's falling apart.
You know what? I saw it's like Comedy Central one time. Yeah, and like American history is like totally perverted and kind of half forgotten and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think when people say, you know, without the government, who'd take care of the roads? You know, I think without the government, you wouldn't need roads because we'd all be having flying cars because people would be tinkering in the garage like you do.
And this rhetorical, you know, move right here is the number one thing in the Obama campaign besides Romney's tax returns. Like, oh, well, we have roads and bridges. Therefore, you know, you are a wage slave to the state.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what's leading campaign 2012. I mean, it's ridiculous, man. And I do nothing but just... I don't know. I'm just so frustrated, you know, every time I hear this fucking stuff on the radio.
Yeah, let's not talk about it. So, talk a little bit about the Liberator gun and the Deer gun and how they are proof of concept for your proof of concept and what they are.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, maybe they're not direct proofs of proof of concepts, but I mean, the Liberator... It proved that it was...
No. What is it? What is it? There's about 2,000 people listening, and about 200 of them know what a Liberator is. So tell what it is. I'll tell what it is. It's a gun that was...
My understanding of the Liberator was that it was developed in World War II as a gun that we would drop over Europe to help the people kind of liberate themselves, right? It'd be like it's a one-shot pistol. I think it might come with a couple rounds or something. Very, very simple action. You know, just a little snub... barrel and everything.
Yeah,
we had just distributed these everywhere.
It was all stamped metal. It was all stamped metal. It was made for the equivalent of like $13 in today's money. It was made by, you know, some headlight company, car headlight company, and it was all stamped and milled and like really cheaply made. It fit in your hand. It was smaller than a snub-nosed revolver. It fired a 45, which would kick your hand firing something that little with a 45.
Right.
But it came with pictographic instructions. Of how to use it, and how you're supposed to use it was walk up to a Nazi, ask him for a cigarette, put it under the back of his helmet and shoot him in the base of his brain, and then take his gun and his uniform and his food and whatever else you want to feel an insurgence, which is not what your gun is for, right? I mean, that's not the idea.
No. But I don't try to intend a purpose for this gun other than the fact that it should exist. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, so I'm not going to superintend like, oh, well, this is what the gun is for, you know?
Yeah.
The idea itself is what I'm intending.
And the Liberator was a proof of concept for an incredibly cheaply made gun that was meant to be mass produced. And it was never really distributed much. And then they made an update of it called the Deer Gun, a 9mm version that was simpler and smaller in World War, Vietnam, which was never really, like, these two guns were distributed a little bit, not as much as was intended. Basically, the OSS, the precursor to the CIA, came up with the idea. And the idea was to arm the insurgency by giving them a one-shot gun that could get them a better gun. But the proof of concept, as it relates to yours, is if someone says, oh, a gun can't be made that cheaply, it's been done. And I've seen a Liberator in the Cody Gun Museum in Cody, Wyoming, with the original pictographic, here's how to shoot the Nazi and take his gun after you ask him for a cigarette. Yeah.
I think it's a shame that people, what you just said, that criticism, like, well, it's already been done cheaply, and that's not the point. Even if it's expensive right now, you know, market forces and demand should dictate that comes, you know, if you let prices work. So I'm not even worried about its impracticality from a fuel standpoint. It's just, can it exist?
I'm thinking about, like, the room full of computer equipment I'm in right now. You know, there's probably about $5,000 worth of equipment in this room, audio and computer and video equipment. And it's like, it's literally more computing power than what put the man on the moon in 1969.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, my first dot matrix printer cost $700, was noisy as hell, printed like crap. And, you know, I've got like a $150 black and white printer here that blows it away and is really quiet and reliable. And, you know, I mean, how much is a 3D printer now and how much is it going to be in 5 years?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these commercial ones are off the charts, man. You can get an object printer for like $500,000, you know, but I mean, these rep wraps you can do for under $1,000.
Well,
I think Mojo printer is $10,000.
And I think they'll also come to, you know, universities probably have them, and, you know, people have them at their work and could use them at night when no one's looking, or, you know, I think Kinko's will have them in 5 years. They'll probably have like, you can't print gun sign on them. But I really think that what you're doing is the proof of concept to enable the beginning of the 3D printing gun hobbyist movement.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. This is kind of one of the secondary conversations we've had, too. It's like, does the gun help 3D printing, or does 3D printing help the gun? You know, it's who's being more reciprocal and what's being advanced? What you said about Kinko's, I think was pretty instructive as well. I think there'll be a period where, probably a much more rapid period than in the 80s and with actual desktop printing, where this technology kind of amasses in more public spaces for lease use and stuff like that. But if these printers begin to be able to print out their own parts, and this is in my video, I mean, this is what the RepRap project's about. If the printer can print itself, you revolutionize the technology overnight.
Yeah, I mean, that's the holy grail of 3D printing is the printer that can print itself, right?
Right.
So let's do a little another station ID here and then come back for more.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people.
I'm pretty anxious to do this and get this uploaded. It's your first interview on this, right? First spoken
that's
interview?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe the only one, man. I'm anxious about interviews.
Well, you shouldn't be. And I mean, I actually like bumped another interview that was supposed to come out this Saturday. Usually this comes out on Saturday, and I had one slated to come out, and I asked the guy, and he's okay, and I moved it till next week. And I'm putting this out before Saturday because I want to get out there and promote the hell out of this and get you some donations and some more press, good and bad press. I mean, I'm going to send it to I'm going to send it to people that might hate it too, as well as
I hope you do. Honestly, I hope you do. I mean, just having these conversations and engaging with the idea, I'm not just saying that. I think that's probably the most important part of this.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I want to help you out in some like minor way. I don't ever want any money, but I like to help people out. I want to be like the Sean Fanning to Facebook, to you, you know, like the guy who came in and said like, and by the way, don't call it the Facebook. Just drop the. Just call it Facebook. You know, I want to be that guy for you. I want to give you some ideas. So here's some ideas I want to run by you. One is...
Oh, damn. I should write these down. Hold on.
You'll have the interview. You'll have a... Well, you could also file a FOIA request and get it from the government, because I'm sure they're recording all my calls by this point. So
you're right. I can listen to it in prison.
What do you think about a really basic version of it that doesn't even have a trigger and a pin that would basically be a shotgun that wouldn't even require a bullet?
Like a bang stick with like powder you just like load debris into or something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about that. Have you ever seen the Star Trek where James Tiberius Kirk builds a shotgun out of found objects and destroys a monster with it?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is, I mean, you know, the hardest to get part other than the 3D printer, once you have the tube that can fire something, you know, Boston Tea Party said, a gun is just a modern way of throwing a rock. And I like to throw that into the face of scientists that are anti-gun. I can't believe how many scientists are anti-gun, man. It's like, you know, guns are rocket science, and you've got a little rocket in your pocket, you know, and it's like, it's all Newtonian physics. There's nothing complex about it. It's worked the same way for 300 years. Why wouldn't you want to have one of those? And the other thing is like... Scientists, you know, I guess like the Mythbusters are like the only people doing it right. They do stuff with guns, and they live in San Francisco. But they generally have a cop standing them next to them. But I think that's for insurance purposes. But they're gun people.
Yeah, they do seem that. I really like Jamie and those guys. That's a really cool outfit. Not that I watch it all the time, but you're right. Their approach to science is not, the word that comes to mind is vulgar. But I don't mean it in a pejorative way. I just mean like they're not. There's no touchy subjects for them. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. Are you going to have a don't try this at home disclaimer on your gun?
No, I'm not. No, not at all. I don't pretend to be paternalistic to anyone or anything. In fact, probably someone else understands what we're doing better than we do. You know, how can I tell someone to not try this at home?
And are you going to encourage people to copy and improve upon it?
Oh, yes. I hope we've done that enough, and we will continue to do that more, but I'm just convinced that there are no delusions of grandeur here. We just figured like, hey, let's step up and try to do it. And I hope that someone copies us and does it better and overshadows us and eclipses us completely. I just want this to be in the world and something that people have to deal with, you know? And in fact, if I can tell you, there's a story. One of the greatest things I've seen so far, beyond some of the really encouraging comments and stuff, one of the subreddits, I think it's the gun subreddit on reddit.com, he was a senior in college, I think, and he said, you know what? Like, this is something I've been thinking about, and I think I want to make this a design of a gun like this, a 3D printable gun, my senior research project.
Awesome.
And I was just blown away. I was like, yes, please. Yeah, this is exactly what we hope to kind of inspire.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been, You know, I don't like state-run schools, but if people are in them, I'm glad if they're using stuff that I helped do. My book, $30 Film School, has been quoted in several master's theses for filmmakers, which is kind of cool. I like that. You know, something you could also look into is if you do the James Tiberius Kirk model, you know, as well as the trigger firing pin model. You know, the trigger firing pin model would need a bullet, which some places you can't get a bullet. The small shotgun model, you know, the pocket plastic blunderbuss, you know, I'm thinking about like what gunpowder is made of. It's basically, you know, charcoal, sulfur, and saltpeter. Charcoal is everywhere in the world. You can make it anytime you want. Right. Sulfur is pretty easy to find. It grows naturally, or it occurs naturally, you know, sticking out a rock somewhere. You can shave it off and just do what you want with it. The tricky one is saltpeter. I mean, it's pretty commonly available, but it's probably controlled a lot of places. But literally, you can make a substitute using urine. And during the Civil War, when there was a shortage of gun, but black powder, they went around collecting. It was the patriotic thing to do. I forget if it was in the North or the South, probably the South, because they were less funded. You know, they didn't have the federal government to steal for them. They had people going around collecting buckets of urine. You know, you'd collect urine for a few days and then the soldiers would come by and take it. And they used the urea from it as the nitrate to make simple black powder. So basically piss, charcoal, you know, piss, burnt wood, and sulfur, and you've got a gun.
You know, it doesn't take a lot of convincing for me. I think it's just something that we'll have the time and inclination to pursue. So, yeah, why not, man? Let's throw it on. Let's do it.
I mean, I think it would be an even easier proof of concept. It would be a first stage. Well, your first stage proof of concept is a non-working model, right?
Right, right.
And then your second, your goal is a working model that can fire a bullet with a trigger of some sort, right?
Right, we were looking at the 22LR, and we're just convinced that, I mean, other people have reinforced this stuff as well. We really tried to get some legitimate professional consultation involved before we just kind of, you know, stuck our noses out there. But yeah.
22LR is a great round for this because, first of all, anything with higher pressure, you're going to risk blowing the gun apart. Secondly, it's the cheapest round commercially available. You can buy them in Walmart in bulk for 5 cents each. Thirdly, you know, while they are small and they're not like what most people carry for self-defense or use for hunting anything big, they can kill a person and they can kill a deer. I mean, you could kill a deer with one. You may have to run a mile before the deer dies. But literally, if you were starving to death, people, you know, there's a lot of people who are preppers. They prep all, they save all kinds of ammo, but they especially save 22LR, first of all, because it probably will be used as money when money doesn't work, you know, whereas, you know, yeah, everyone's saving gold and silver, but it's like, if you want to buy something that costs a dollar, you know, it's a tiny piece of even silver and just an almost unviewable piece of gold. So you use 22LR as your quarters or half dollars. And they're about 5 cents each now. And, you know, you could shoot a deer and then run about a mile after it and then it'll be dead. It'll be full of adrenaline and it won't taste great, but it'll keep you from starving to death. So I think 22LR is a great proof of concept for this.
Well, thank you very much. A lot of criticism has been, well, not a whole lot, but some criticism has been, oh, why would you want some just weak-ass gun like that? You know, and obviously our material constraints are the biggest thing. But look, yeah, like what you said, the 22 is going to kill you just as much as the next round if it's placed, you know?
Yeah, the thing is it may not stop you as quickly. I mean, there are endless discussions back and forth on gun boards about like, well, I carry this, well, I carry this. And, you know, the people who are really in the know basically say it doesn't matter that much. It's all about shot placement. And, you know, the 22 you'll carry with you all the time is better than the heavy 45 you leave at home on your dresser.
Exactly. Which gun's more effective right now? The one in your hand, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I know a few people have been shot, and I know a guy, we interviewed a guy last week who has shot and killed someone in self-defense, some guy that hit him with a baseball bat and was about to beat him to death for no reason at all in a park in Alaska.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've never shot anyone in self-defense. I carry all the time. I often carry a Glock 23, Model 23, which is a 40 caliber, which is what most cops and fed goons carry. And it's a really man-stopping round. But around the house and around the yard, I don't want to carry the weight. I carry a 38 pocket snubby, which weighs 15 ounces loaded, holds 5 shots. And I'm comfortable with that. You know, for one thing, I could fight my way back to a bigger gun in the house if I needed to with that.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, do you think, here's the thing for me. How do you expect outside of the Liberty community, that this would go down? I mean, I might as well ask you, you know, like, what do you think will be the reaction to this? Let's say if we were to get some kind of wider audience.
Well, most people are idiots. So you're going to get a lot of haters, both from the anti-gun people and the gun people. That is my prediction.
Do you think we'd be betrayed by the conservatives in any way?
What's that?
Do you think we'd be betrayed by the conservatives?
I don't know what you mean by betrayed, but I think I could totally see a Republican trying to pass a law against this once it comes out.
Yeah. Man, it's a shame. It really is.
I really think the next big round of gun control is going to come from Republicans, or at least with Republican backing. There's no difference anymore. They're both tyrants, always have been, but really are now.
I mean, I agree with you, right? But I mean, how do you see that practically playing out? Like, when would that happen, and then what are the conditions for how it happens?
Well, most Republicans are NRA types. I mean, the NRA is friggin' huge, and they're the biggest, most powerful lobbying group there is. The NRA is really powerful and really square. And the average NRA gun owner, you know, probably has a deer rifle in their closet, goes out hunting a few times a year. A lot of them have concealed carry permits and carry a gun. I have a concealed carry permit, but I actually live in a state where you no longer need it. Anybody can carry a gun in Wyoming now, as long as you're not a felon and if they're an adult.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can literally walk into a gun store here, put money down, buy a gun, buy bullets, you know, load it. They probably won't let you load it in the store, but you can go out your car and load it and stick it in a holster in your pocket and walk around with it legally with no paperwork.
That's perfect.
And and we have like one of the lowest crime rates, you know, of anywhere, which, probably has a lot to do with the low population. And actually, it's kind of weird. It probably has a lot to do with the church. I'm not religious, but the church tends to deal people that don't want to hit you over the head with a brick for some smack.
I got to be honest, man. Church people are still the people that I trust the most, right? Even if I totally disagree with their religion. I mean, I know that they're trustworthy people.
Yeah, if I was hiring people to, like, you know, bury gold in my backyard, I'd probably hire church people. Not freaky pop.
Right, to build, help you build your bunker and everything.
Yeah. I'd probably hire Mormons from up the street, from the temple. But
and, you know, they do that kind of stuff. I'm not a really big prep or anything, but I know a lot of the best food you can buy for that stuff is from the Mormons, LDS and everything.
Oh, yeah, they have a PDF on prepping. That's what we use to plan what we prep, and we're not religious. My wife and I use that. And they actually talk about prepping guns in there, too, not just food, but guns, medical supplies, water, everything, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah. And, they've been no friend of the federal government. I mean, the federal government's been no friend of the Mormons, but,
right.
I guess sometimes they forget that, but, you know, cause now they want to like vote in Mormons to do their bidding. I don't know. But anyway, boy, that was a whole bunch of off the line stuff there that had nothing to do with your question. And
I started interviewing you, you know,
did.
I kind of like
you
changed
did.
The program around.
That's fine. so the NRA, the average NRA owner, you know, to give a thumbnail is a person who votes Republican, thinks Romney can save us from Obama, and has a concealed carry permit, and is madly patriotic, probably has a kid in the army, is incredibly proud of that, has a bumper sticker about their kid in the army. You know, I don't want to get too... I was going to say, you know, if their kid died, they'd be happy because, you know, in the army, because it was in the service, but I don't want to go there. But they're really patriotic. They really love Republicanism. They hate Democrats. They think there's a big difference. And they have a carry permit and think that that is good. They think carry permits are good. And they think that the Second Amendment really protects them and that their rifles are going to be a line in the sand when the government goes too far, which is ridiculous. Because once there are drones... A rifle is not going to protect you. You know, there's going to be no second. There's going to be no second American Revolution. You know, there could be a million ruby ridge, you know, a thousand ruby ridges, but it's not going to keep the government away. What's going to keep the government away is removing the demand for it, removing the market for it.
Yes.
Voluntarily.
I agree.
You know, with education. And I think what you're doing is a small, weird part of that. That's important.
Oh man, I don't even think it's that weird. I think it is. I'm not going to overestimate its importance, but I mean, I think this kind of action is the kind of action people need to take when they just are. I'm not going to wait for a bill to be passed. You know what I mean? I'm not going to wait for someone else to do it. I'm just going to do something that totally obviates government action. It's not necessary. It's not part of the equation. You know, we're just doing it ourselves. We're ignoring them to death. We're starving
yeah.
the beast. You know?
I didn't mean, I wasn't being derogatory when I said weird. I just mean like, you know, most of the people I know who do activism are like me. They have a radio show. They talk about a lot and try to educate people. Or I have friends that do, you know, like go out and do stuff that can get them arrested, like smoke a joint in front of the cops and film it and put it on YouTube.
No offense taken or anything. I just felt like instead of weird, I was like, well, no, I feel it's kind of intuitive.
That's,
but I see the point you were making.
It's no one's done it yet. That makes it weird. once
right.
you've done it and there's
right.
like, once there's a hobbyist group for it and there's five people doing it, it's not going to be weird anymore. But yeah. You know,
I think what I'd say is you said something about the Second Amendment, and not that I'm a straight constitutionalist, because that kind of begs certain questions about the legitimacy of centralized government anyway. But if we want to look at the Second Amendment from some kind of conservative perspective, mainstream perspective, it must be more on our side than anyone else's, right? I mean, what is that inspiring idea that you must be able to overcome and overthrow your government?
Right. And the average NRA owner agrees with that, but for some reason also is patriotic, which is really, I mean, to me, it's like a Jew in 1939 saying, "Go Nazis." It really is.
I agree. There's a strong unconscious contradiction in terms there somewhere. I think any kind of blind patriotism is, right? I'm not trying to proselytize people, you know, against the state and anything like that. But I mean, yeah, these are my impressions as well.
All right. I think I'm out of questions. We're not out of time, but do you want to talk a little more about things connected to your printable gun project? When do you see it happen? When do you think you're going to get it done? You know, to have one to demonstrate firing it on YouTube. And I would highly recommend the first time you fire one of these, you tie a string to it and do it from a distance.
Really? Well, of course. And that's how we plan to test it, right? We're not going to like twist it in our hands and everything. When do I imagine things? Let's see. Our fundraising ends September 10th, I think. 20 days from that, I believe our proof of concept will be totally ready in CAD and everything. And I'm already confident that thing's going to be, you know, 30 days after we're done, the first file will be out there.
Excellent.
And I can't know what our obstacles are going to be completely and what we'll be dealing with for the Wiki Weapon B, what we're calling it, the one that has the complete mechanical action. Yeah. But I'm guessing 90 days, because there's nothing I want to do but do this and finish this and do this well. And yes, I'm going back to school, but come on, man. I mean, it's liberty we're talking about. So I've got a huge team of people, a ton of resources. People are contributing their expertise and time and contact information all the time. I'm gonna pick the best people for the job. If we find that we're inadequate in some way, at some point, it will be accomplished. And that's not just bravado. I just feel that it is totally possible.
I believe you. You're a smart guy and you're driven and you have an unusual way of looking at things. There's that word again, weird, unusual. You have uncommon qualities of being able to look at things from many different angles and, like, you know, so far outside the box that you can't even see the box, and into the other dimensions of the box that you can't see when you look at the box. So I wish you luck, and if I can help out in any way, let me know. If you need any gun questions answered, give me a call. And I really look forward to this getting out there, man. Thanks for doing it.
Michael, thank you so very much, man. I really appreciate this, and this has been encouraging as well. I know it's a friendly audience by and large, but this is a good experience. I just really appreciate it.
Excellent. And it won't be a friendly audience after I mail it off to a bunch of people.
That's fine.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Worms.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square.
Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends' weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com. All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.